Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of filmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, my two co-hosts. There is Nick Newman, associate editor for the Film Stage Show.
All right.
This is the Nightcrawler one.
Oh, you mean you're releasing them separate?
Both of them are separate.
If you want to win the lottery, et cetera.
Okay, we'll just cut that out. We also have Danny King, writer for the Film Stage.
Hello.
Well, as everyone is now abundantly aware, we're going to have two episodes this week. This first episode, or that you're listening to now, or possibly second, depending on the order in which you've listened to them, is about Nightcrawler, the newest film starring Jake Gyllenhaal by director Dan Gilroy. And the other episode that we're going to be releasing is on Christopher Nolan's Interstellar, which stars Matthew McConaughey, Jessica Chastain, and Anne Hathaway. It's a packed week. We got two very different movies to talk about. If you're looking for, like, discussion stuff and the week ahead with the Blu-rays and everything, go listen to Interstellar. This is just going to be a review of Nightcrawler.
So, Danny, what did you think of Interstellar? Oh, man, this Blu-ray lineup for next week is...
Oh, God. All right. Well, anyway, Nightcrawler. That's the newest film by writer-director Dan Gilroy.
First film, I think.
I was about to say, actually, his first film. Stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Rene Russo, and Riz Ahmed.
Excuse me, sir? I'm looking for a job. In fact, I've made up my mind to find a career that I can learn and grow into. Who am I? I'm a hard worker. I set high goals, and I've been told that I'm persistent. Now, I'm not fooling myself, sir. Having been raised with the self-esteem movement so popular in schools, I used to expect my needs to be considered. But I know that today's work culture no longer caters to the job loyalty that could be promised to earlier generations. What I believe, sir, is that good things come to those who work their asses off, and that good people, such as yourself, who reached the top of the mountain, didn't just fall there. My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. You have to make the money to buy a ticket. You have to make the money to buy a ticket!
So Nightcrawler is the story of Lewis Bloom, who is a thief at the beginning, but then decides that maybe he's found his calling in the world of freelance video journalism.
Natural.
Which is a polite way of saying that he trolls the night looking for horrific crimes to film with a camcorder so he can sell them to news stations looking to boost their ratings with juicy, lurid stories about crime in Los Angeles. This movie had been getting some pretty good reviews coming out of a lot of festivals, so let's see what we thought of it. Danny King, what was your take on Nightcrawler?
I liked Nightcrawler. Enjoyed the film. For me, it's definitely like a sort of original screenplay movie, like capital O, capital S.
But the rest of it is all lowercase, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it definitely has like a polish to it because it was shot by Robert Elswit. I think it was shot on film. So LA looks really good, and especially a lot of it takes place at night. So people have sort of compared it, I think, both to like Michael Mann's work, especially like Thief, and then also Drive. And I think the movie looks really good, but to me it is sort of driven by the screenplay. When Jake Gyllenhaal, after like a failed job interview, first stumbles upon a crash scene, there's a long, like maybe a minute or two, just following him as he approaches this car crash, and there's a definite feeling like, oh shit, this is like the event that's about to start the narrative. And then throughout the movie, there are just a lot of things that kind of give it the sense of a film like being driven by a writer's sensibility. And I think that's both good and bad. Like, there are lines like Rene Russo's character, when Jake Gyllenhaal asks her what kind of content she's looking for, she's like, well, the tone of our news station is a woman running through the street with her throat cut. And that's sort of a line where, like, if you were working at a production company and you got that script, you'd be like, oh, that's a really cool line. Like, this is a good script. But, like, to hear her say it in a movie that seems to be going for a kind of realism a lot of the time, it's just sort of, like, jarring and not maybe, like, something I would call, like, good writing. Or, but at the same time, the character it creates is so interesting. This guy, Lewis Bloom, and Jake Gyllenhaal, who lost a bunch of weight for the role, he kind of kills it, I think. And one of the things I like about the character is that he's sort of like a distinctly 21st century sociopath. There's a scene I really like where he's talking to Rene Russo, and he starts talking about this business course he took online. And he talks about it as if it's like this really invested like experience. But as he talks about it, you just sort of like picture this guy's life. And it's like him just sitting at home taking courses all day. And he thinks this is like normal. And like that's his life. And people have kind of described his character as almost every line feels like something he would say at a seminar or like a TED talk. And I think that's something that's really specific to, like, the moment, like, that would maybe separate it from an obvious, like, predecessor, like Taxi Driver or something. It seems like this guy couldn't have been created without the internet. And so that's something I really liked. And I thought that was pretty specific. And Gyllenhaal, you know, he goes all the way for this character, and it's really entertaining to watch. I would say that... the other thing that kind of holds back the movie is the media satire angle, which in a movie that sort of plays like a smartly written, crafted movie, doesn't feel as smart as a lot of the other stuff. And I myself got the feeling that it thought of itself as a smart media satire and that it was like making observations that were sort of, if not novel, at least meant to like sort of shock you. Whereas I didn't really get that feeling. But overall, I think this is like just a really fun movie and I would recommend it, if not kind of praising it as much as some other people have.
All right. Nick Newman, what about yourself?
Yeah, it's funny that we're reviewing this now because I actually saw it about a week ago. And
indeed.
It's given me a little more time to sit on it, and ultimately my feelings on the movie are, well, let's just say mixed, but more specifically, I do appreciate how this movie is willing to, you know, be a little ugly, be a little nasty, not show Los Angeles for, not hold back anything in its depiction of Los Angeles, I suppose, and I think the film is really cooking when it's getting down to that sort of business, but as Danny was alluding to, or just saying, there is this media satire angle that I found not only very tiresome, but also just too domineering as part of the film's overall fabric. And there was this weird tension where, on a basic screenplay level, I don't think this film is anything more to say than an episode of The Newsroom, frankly.
Oh, God.
And I think
we
that
can,
often it...
We can get into that, I guess.
I think often it kind of has the tone of something like that. It's very smug, I see what you guys are up to tone that doesn't really do anybody any good because it's not like it's anything new. But I do think there are times where Gilroy as a director brings out certain things in that particular undercurrent through his own direction, the way he cuts between faces and screens during those moments when there are those debates going on, I think is of some, you know, definitely of some value, the way that he kind of brings about both the human and the business factor just through simple cutting and shooting definitely got me excited. And on top of that, there are there's one set piece at the climax of the film that I think is really terrific. It would actually, I think, make a great short film in its own way. And the truth is that I think you could do that and not really lose much in terms of thematic power, quote-unquote. I think that it would kind of not be the same film, of course, but I think that you would get as much out of it in terms of its satire and its commentary if you just knew that this is a determined guy who wants to make some money. Because it is a pretty great scene. It's very exciting, and the director it brings most to mind, I think unsurprisingly, is Brian De Palma. It's kind of a very body double-esque way of wrapping things up, and eventually I was kind of hoping that he was the one who had directed this, just because I think someone like him could have brought a more interesting touch. Otherwise, I think the film is also... the film looks kind of ugly, I think. The digital cinematography, except when it's at night,
tends to be... Is it digital cinematography? Because I had heard somewhere that it actually was 35mm.
It looks digital. I don't know. This is interesting. Let me Google this.
I mean, looking at it and the way that the night looks in it, I mean, it's just like Collateral, which was famously digital.
Yeah, that's what got me thinking it. It seems like it was a mix.
Interesting.
Okay. Well, either way, I thought the cinematography in the film was sort of a letdown, because it is Robert Elswit, who is, you know, who's very good, and he just was on Inherent Vice, another sort of L.A. set mystery seedy kind of deal. And I don't know. I found that it was just sort of a basic failing of the film, but one of the anchors around which the film can be based is Gyllenhaal's performance, and I think he's pretty terrific here, actually. He's one of those actors who I'm kind of continually surprised by, even though I feel like at this point I shouldn't be. I think because it's easy to just think of him as, you know, Don Darko or Prince of Persia, and not...
I don't think of him as Prince of Persia, ever. I never think of Prince of Persia.
I've never even seen, like, 5 seconds of that movie. But otherwise... No, I mean, I think he's really terrific here. It's not just things like line delivery or something. It's not just the way he can, like, you know, stand up straight or whatever. It's particularly the use of his eyes, which are very... intent-driven, I guess.
They're hauntingly large.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of... It's this thing where he lost about 20 pounds, but, I mean, usually when someone loses 20 pounds, they don't look this different. It's strange. Yeah. It's also the haircut as well. He just looks very sleazy. He matches a certain nice sleaziness.
His wardrobe is also a big part of it, too.
Well, it's funny because the whole... You kind of get the sense that he's disabled in more than a few ways. Yeah. Like, he's sort of an idiot savant, I suppose. And you get the sense that he's struggling with a few things, which I think
he's
engenders...
He's a rip-roaring full-on sociopath, too.
Well, that as well. But I think it also... it's interesting because there are the scenes of him at home, and I think it engenders a certain sympathy that you wouldn't otherwise have. I think that was a smart decision.
Because he's, like, taking care of a plant.
Exactly, and that seems to be something he gets immense satisfaction from, which is strange.
I was about to say, I usually say something in that tone if I'm being, like, sarcastic, but no, like, there's something to this character where the fact that he actually takes time out of his day to take care of a plant humanizes him in a way that very little else that he does actually humanizes him.
Mm-hmm. So, it's funny, I'm saying these positive things about it, but I think it's just a matter of this mix and match in my mind of things things that were sort of evident on a first viewing and things that have sort of perhaps corroded a bit as a week passes by. Ultimately, I think the film was okay. I think that there are, as I said, I think there are things that are not only of merit, but are of merit in a very specific way, ways that I don't think a lot of filmmakers would have brought out of their material. But as far as as far as films about misanthropic career driven types are concerned, give me Listen Up Philip over this, but
boo.
Then again, you know, give me Listen Up Philip over most films that came out this year.
Oh my god, give me Listen Up Philip or give me Death. So I loved this film. I'm going to say a bunch of positive things about it, and I feel positive about it, so that's going to be a change of pace, I guess. So, for me, to start off, I thought that the movie was beautiful. I thought the cinematography was great. It reminded me of Drive. It reminded me of Collateral. And I really love, you know, what we're able to do with shooting at night now. I don't know if it's, I guess we're kind of still split between the 35mm and
digital.
Yeah,
I think I saw maybe it was 35 during the day and then digital at night.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's fine. I can get behind that. And they were obviously using digital cameras, so every time you saw something that they shot, it was digital. But I thought the movie was beautiful. I thought that especially the climactic act was just jaw-droppingly gorgeous. I know the media satire is very over the top, but it fit the lurid kind of grimy tone of the film so much that I didn't mind the heightened reality of it. Especially because you had someone like Rene Russo who was anchoring it and really sinking her fucking fangs into it. And she's the type of person who at first seems kind of like, you know, basic, nice, doesn't really matter. But then towards the end of the movie, I feel like if she saw a woman running down the street screaming with her throat cut, that she would then pounce on her and drink her blood. And it's awesome to see the way that her interactions with Lewis change her as a person. The way that they talk to one another is like purely through the kinds of platitudes and aphorisms that you would get from a motivational speaker. And yet there's this weird, like, flirty context to it that then curdles and corrupts the longer that they're together. And just watching their relationship change is a really great joy in this film. Jake Gyllenhaal, who I loved in Enemy, we all remember. I mean,
and Prisoners.
And Prisoners. I mean, I love Prisoners too. I was just going to go for movies from this year, but
nope,
whatever.
Nope.
But he is goddamn fantastic in this movie. I mean, he's just like this coiled, like, shimmering fucking... it's so difficult to come up with a word for it. He's, like, almost alien. And every time he was on the screen talking to anyone, I was just like, he is gonna pick up a knife and murder this person. Because there's such a raw intensity to him. And he's so open about how he is. And he tells everyone around him the type of person that he is. And it, like, would legitimately scare me. But there's something kind of beautiful about a character like that, who's so open, and who you feel like isn't really a threat because you're able to, you know, hear what he's saying and pretty obviously discern what he wants, because he only ever talks in desires and objectives and plans to achieve them. And that makes all of his scenes with Riz Ahmed, who plays his assistant, Rick, just that much better. Because here's this poor harangued guy who just can't seem to do a thing right. And it's this weird push-pull tension, because Lou is a sociopath who values human life only as much as it can make him money on the nightly news. And Riz, who plays Rick, is this poor, like, homeless guy just looking for a job. And it's just like, get out of there, man. This is a terrible situation for you to be in. But he gets this weird sense of purpose from helping this guy do this, like, you know, exciting thing. And it was odd because at first, when they first kind of get together, I'm like, get out of there, Rick, come on. But then when they're actually in the car together, every time that Rick would fuck up and, like, tell them the wrong turn, I'd be like, oh, come on, Rick. Like, it's so easy. Like, he's telling you exactly what to do. And it was odd how the movie could make me shift my allegiances that way. So, yeah, I really, really quite enjoyed this film. You know, yeah, the media satire, it's been said before. And I think that some of it doesn't need to be said again. But as I said, that heightened reality of it made it work for me, and the way that it played into the tone and the acting was fantastic.
Yeah, I would definitely echo what you said about Renee Russo. She's sort of like a really fantastic actress that just doesn't work that often, and especially not like a role as interesting as this. I mean, she's like recently been in the two Thor movies, which I think I viewed, but I don't.
Yeah, it was funny.
She's probably like the best part of them.
You forget Anthony Hopkins.
Okay, yeah.
It was funny because, yeah, I saw this and I was like, man, where has Renee Russo been? And then I was like, oh, right, she's in those goddamn Thor movies. But, like, I don't think about superhero movies as, like, being a thing that you're in.
Mm.
I almost think of it more as, like, a thing that happens to you. And apparently Idris Elba agrees with me. If you saw the comments that he made.
What did he say?
He was going back for reshoots on Thor 2. And he was like, I just gotten done playing Nelson Mandela.
Oh, wow.
And then here I was with these contacts in.
Oh,
this
God.
Giant helmet. And I was like in a harness in front of a green screen, like pretending to cling on to a spaceship.
That's Is that rude. Not just a scene from Extras?
Yes. I was about to say, that syncs up really well with Birdman.
It's really funny.
Yeah. And so, I was just like, you know, I'm sure she's. I can't remember most of what happens in a Thor movie. More than any other Marvel movie, the Thor movies just kind of exist in this kind of ethereal smoke that, like, fills the room and then clears it. I'm sure that she's fine in them. I'm pretty sure she, spoiler alert, dies in the second one.
Yeah, I think I actually remember now being pissed off when she died.
But was it the second one or the first one?
I think it was the second one.
It was the second one. I remember because she was in the second one.
Yeah.
Sort of confused as to, I don't know, just the whole thing was strange. But she was, you know.
I thought she was like, okay, well, it probably doesn't matter.
Who gives a shit?
But that's what I'm just saying. Like, in this, I remember every scene she's in so clearly. And, like, just the little affectations she does. Like, when they go to the Mexican restaurant.
Oh, boy.
And, which was, like, great scene number one. And he's explaining to her, like, about their ratings book and, like, his work helping to raise their ratings. And she, like, just does that thing where, like, she fans herself. Like, even something as simple as that, like, she sells the shit out of that moment. And she also sells the hell out of the fact that you can believe that she could unfortunately be this strong and yet still be manipulated into doing this creature's will. By, like,
Yeah, there's sort of, like, dark. A weird development where, like, by the end, he has, like, driven her insane.
Yeah, she has this great line, I think Lou's pushing us all to be a little bit better.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, shh.
I goddamn loved that moment.
It's like, yeah, it's like something has gone wrong here.
Yeah, and then you've got, I don't know what his name is. He's the guy from Mad Men who plays Ted Chaw. And, like, I guess this guy is just going to make a sideline in being, like, the moral center is just harangued by the sociopath who's a lot better at talking than he is. Because he's got a great look for it. He's got, like, really wide eyes, and his mouth is almost constantly agape in, like, bafflement.
Yeah. Two scenes I'll point out. One of them kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, but it's when he's gotten there to a scene before the cops, and he, like, moves a body to improve his shot.
Yeah, man, he's just working on the mise-en-scene.
And one thing I liked about that is, like, he, by this point we have established his insanity so well that feels less like a sadistic act than it does like something he just picked up from, like, a YouTube video of, like, how to direct, and he's just sort of, like, implementing something he remembered. So it's, like, I actually think that scene works because, like, on paper, it's sort of like, okay, we're going way over the top with, like, how these videos are manipulated, but the way Gyllenhaal plays it, it's, like, he's not really just taking pleasure in being violent. He's like, I just want to make a really good movie, and, like, this is going to help me out.
There's that scene when he's talking to her, and I think it's the scene where he's talking about the business course, and then he's like, you know, you have to find something that you can love and excel at. And then he almost has, like, tears in his eyes as he talks about how this is, like, something TV news is something that he could excel at and that he could love. And, like, you do kind of get a feeling that most of what he's doing is out of that sense, which is horrifying. Because, yeah, he's not trying to, like, frame someone for a murder by, like, moving a body to a car crash. He's not fundamentally changing the truth of what happened. He's just making it more interesting. And I mean,
of course.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you're like, yeah, I guess so. It's the type of thing that we do in biopics all the time.
Yeah, and then the other scene that I thought was really amazing was when it's sort of the big event of the movie, when he stumbles upon this house and there's been like a multiple homicide.
Yeah.
And the scene that's great is when they're playing it on the news and Rene Russo is like coordinating with the anchors. And I think that actually is maybe the best like satirical scene in the film, because what the anchors say is so like cringe inducing. Like they're just, she's like, okay, mention the crib, and they're like, oh yes, and then it's
she's
clearly
like, really,
a crib.
Really build it up, really build it up.
Clearly the room of a young child here, and then there's like, is anything in there? Oh no, very good. We don't want children. Yeah. They're like, everything.
Great, because they're like, yeah, I think it's the female anchor who's like, you know, oh, you see that crib, and you just pray there's nothing in there. But it's like, you know that she's saying literally the opposite of what everyone is like feeling on some level.
Yeah.
Because it's like, no, there's a goddamn crib. I want to see like a dead baby in there. But then you see it and you're like, oh, okay, good. My humanity has won out and my bloodlust can be like temporarily put to the side.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I think was actually an insanely effective media satire scene. Whereas some of her like screaming about ratings and the right thing to do for the station was a little much. But I actually fully enjoyed that one. So do we want to talk spoilers about this film? Is there anything that we could say in spoilers that would either clarify or kind of further act as an example of any of the points we've made?
Weirdly, I don't know if there is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was going to describe the final set piece, but I don't really know. I guess one thing I'll say. I don't know if this isn't even a spoiler what I'm going to say, but it seems... I guess I wonder about the climax of this film in relation to what happens to the character after this, because if you think about it, he's captured what's pretty much the most amazing single piece of footage from a newsman ever, maybe. I mean, even more, if you think about it, something like 9/11 or the Hindenburg or various other disasters that are have famous images attached to them, that was, you know, multiple people were capturing that. This guy has it from the first step to the last.
Yeah.
And he has pretty much everything a attention-seeking newsman could want in a single story. And it just, I don't know, something about it, there was this conflict as I was watching it where I was really enjoying the scene itself because it was very exciting, it was very well staged, and it just, but at the same time, it just felt so preposterous.
Yeah. Actually, you know, let's make this the spoiler. Let's talk about that final scene, because I do have some thoughts on it. So, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about the climactic scene of the film, and then just, you know, the way everything resolves itself. So, there's the murder in the house, and he 100% captures the faces of the people who do it, because he is hiding in the bushes as they run out of the house. Now, I was thinking, oh, he's going to really, like, build this up and make himself appear to be, like, a hero. Incorrect. He edits those people out of the film, completely changes the story so that he only arrived afterwards. And then he finds the people, follows them to a populated area, and then calls the cops and tells them what's up. And then waits. So there is a shootout in a Chinese food restaurant, a high-speed car chase that ends with like at least two cop cars getting demolished, and the assailant that wasn't killed in the shootout in the Chinese food restaurant being like in a flipped over car. Lou tells Rick to go and get a close-up shot of the guy in the car because he's dead. Not dead. The guy shoots and kills Rick, and then Lou is able to get a really nicely composed shot of the final shootout wherein this murderer is put down. Now, the whole film, you don't see any of the acts that get these people killed. You know, the carjackings, the crashes, the fires. You're always showing up, like, in the middle or at the end. And the movie is actually very effective in this action set piece, to the point where it's like that sort of becomes the point of it. I mean, like Nick said, this character just caught the greatest possible thing that an attention-seeking news person could want to capture. And we were there for it, and we saw it. And it's like, yeah, that was thrilling. And it's going to be doubly as thrilling for everyone who sees it, like, kind of found footage style on the news. And it kind of turns around your whole, like, moral superiority about this situation. Because, like, I can 100% say that that was a pretty awesome action scene. And I can't really defend myself against, like, the whole, yeah, I just saw numerous people get murdered. But it was still amazing. So, indictment turned against myself, I guess. That also gives us one of the best scenes between Jake Gyllenhaal and Riz Ahmed, when Jake Gyllenhaal basically says, if you don't do what I want you to do, I'm going to hurt you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, that whole scene was, like, was that not one of, like, the best action scenes we've had in a movie so far this year?
I mean, yeah, it was just, like, really well set up, and the build-up was, like, nicely done. I mean, to just be there with the cameras, especially from Rick's point of view, it's like, what the fuck am I doing? And it's like, the stakes are pretty clear, and yeah, it's a good sequence.
I do like the fact, however, that, so, there's a little bit of ambiguity there, because Gyllenhaal is describing the murderers to the police dispatcher, and he's explaining them, and then he's like, you know, this guy's in a gray sweater, and, you know, he's tall, and this one is in a blue coat, and he has a gun, I have to go. And he doesn't know that the guy has a gun, but, surprise, surprise, the guy had a gun. So, in a way, he actually helped those cops be more prepared through his lie than if he had not lied for the sake of his story.
Mm.
Which I think is an interesting little bit of moral ambiguity there.
Mm.
Nick, any thoughts on this?
It seemed clear enough to me.
It seemed clear enough to me.
Very clear.
The one step too far, maybe, that I think it takes, if there is a misstep the movie makes, is, like, right when they're about to go on the air with this massive shootout, they find out a fact about the case that works as a counterpoint to the narrative of, like, urban crime creeping into
the
suburbs.
Yeah, that's weird that that's sort of, like, tossed in.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, hey, these people were fucking drug traffickers. You know, this wasn't, like, a home invasion. This was, like, a gangland shooting. And Rene Russo's like, yeah, we'll save that for, like, noon.
Yeah.
Cause,
that was sort of just, like, one more emphasis we didn't really need.
Yeah, just a little too much.
Come on, Gilroy.
Come on. No one to end it. But yeah, so on that note, I think we can end this as well. Any final thoughts?
It's okay.
All right, killer.
It's fine.
Nightcrawler, wide release now. I say definitely check it out. One of my favorite of the year so far. That's it. Like I said, we're not going to have any Blu-ray releases or talk about what's coming out next week on this. For all of that, you can find the Interstellar podcast, which will be released pretty much concurrently with this one. So, if you already listened to that, I hope you enjoyed all of them. If you haven't, go over there and check that out. That is all for today. Well, we can still tell people where it can be found online. Danny King, where can we find you online?
TheFilmStage.com, Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin.
And Nick Newman.
TheFilmStage.com and Twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
You can find me at TheFilmStage.com as well as DearFilm.net, my personal site, and Twitter.com/BrianJRowan. Thank you, everyone, and I look forward to speaking with you next week.